Hey y'all, how's it going? Welcome to the show. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. Sit up straight and talk louder. Hey everybody, welcome to the damn show. This is my show, the Scott Horton Show. ScottHorton.org is my website. If you like websites, keep all my interview archives there and all the rest. 3,000 interviews. Plus I got a blog called Stress. And I've got a collection of documentaries I'd have you watch if you like watching documentaries. And I've got a chat room for you to hang out with the boys and girls during the show and say, you know, smart, interesting things to each other while the show's on. ScottHorton.org/chat for that. Also, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at /ScottHortonShow. Facebook, Twitter, YouTube/ScottHortonShow. All right. So, I don't think anybody answered me back. Oh, one person answered me back and said no. Busy. All right. Nobody else even answered me back. I guess I'm chopped liver. That's all right, though. Some people like chopped liver. And there are some people, and I don't know how it splits. 60-40, 70-30, pro or con. I'm not really sure. But I know some of you are bored by the interviews and would rather just hear me complain anyway. I think probably that's a minority. Everybody else wishes I would just shut up and do nothing but interview people. But, well, I don't have anybody to help me arrange all the interviews anymore, and I'm lazy and stupid. Frankly, I don't do the work, so. No interviews for you today. Good news is, if you like good news, Tom Woods interviewed me this morning. That'll be on his show tomorrow. We talked all about Iraq and Ukraine. And yeah, man, I think it went pretty good. Anyway, so last time I was on the Tom Woods show, everybody really liked it. This time, I don't know if I did a good job or not. Actually, I know there's one thing that I screwed up. Anyway, I don't know. So that's the Tom Woods show comes on right before this show on Liberty Express every weekday here for an hour. So that would be, 1 to 2 Eastern time here on Liberty Express Radio. So that's good. And then, there you go. So that's the show. ScottHorton.org, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, /ScottHortonShow, Tom Woods tomorrow. I think that's all the housekeeping I got to do. Oh, no, here's some housekeeping. Week from tomorrow, I will be doing something I don't know. In Washington, D.C., at the National Press Club, at the National Summit to reassess the U.S.-Israel special relationship. And that is being hosted by the Council for the National Interest, of course, Phil Giraldi's group, and Grant Smith's group, the Institute for Research Middle Eastern Policy. And now, I think they said they're going to have me hosting one panel or another. This thing's going on all day long, from 8 to 5. Next Friday at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., coming up here in just a few minutes, you'll hear a spot for it with the long list of names of regular guests on this show that you would like to see at a conference like this. If you can get to Washington, D.C. next Friday. It should be good. You're going to hear the list, but Stephen Waltz is going to be there, Justin Raimondo. There's going to be an entire panel of former CIA officers, which would be Giraldi, McGovern, and who am I forgetting? There's two or three more. I don't know why I'm spacing out all of a sudden on the different CIA agents who are going to be there. I don't think Robert Baer is one of them. Let's see. Anyway. Oh, Scheuer. So Giraldi, Scheuer, McGovern, and there's still one more I'm forgetting. I don't know if it's Well, now I can't even remember the name of the guy that I'm thinking of, man. Come on. I got him bookmarked here. Sixth Semper Tyrannus. Lang. Patrick Lang. I think he may be the fourth guy. I don't know. Anyway, so there's going to be a whole panel of former CIA officers. And there's going to be some authors and some reporters and some speeches and some panel discussions. And the subject will be America and Israel's special relationship. And I'll be there. At least I'll be chilling in the audience. I think perhaps I'll be hosting some sort of panel discussion. I could post a panel discussion too. But so anyway, good times, man. So if you like hanging out at the press club, see you next Friday, huh? All right, good. Which also means I won't be here next Thursday or Friday because, you know, I got to fly an airplane and travel and hail cabs and get in them and all those kinds of things. But anyway, should be a good time. That's the National Summit. It's at natsummit.org. That's it, natsummit.org. To find out all about it. I think it's $25 or $50 or something to get in for the day. For a good cause. And I can't wait to hear Grant F. Smith's speech about how Benjamin Netanyahu was in on the smuggling ring stealing the nuclear triggers. I just love that one when he tells that story. If they let me talk into a microphone, I'm going to talk about the original Bin Laden declaration of war against the Americans occupying the land of the two holy places in 1996, which about a third of it is about Israel killing Lebanese and Palestinians, and how America supports that. And it would also then, I guess, it would have to include how Mohammed Atta, the head hijacker in America on September 11th, how he filled out his last will and testament during Operation Grapes of Wrath, which I guess would have been, you know, a day or two before the Qana massacre that Bin Laden focuses on. It was just a day or two before, and then the Qana massacre happened, even more so. So anyway, that was what convinced Atta that he ought to join up the holy war against the United States, was what Israel was doing in Lebanon. And now, you may agree with the conservatives and the liberals that the price is worth it. As Eric Alterman of The Nation magazine famously said, it's true that American support for Israel is part of what motivated the entire Al-Qaeda movement against the United States, culminating in the September 11th attacks and then all the horrible consequences since then. And he said, and that's okay. That's fine with me. But we should at least be honest about it. Basically, that's what he was saying. There is a true, honest liberal Zionist will admit that America's interests and Israel's interests aren't exactly the same. And then he cites a case where they couldn't be more diametrically opposed, where our support for them gets American citizens killed in hijacking kamikaze attacks. And he says, yeah, that's the way it goes. I would argue that, no, not good enough. It doesn't mean we should give in to terrorists, but it means that since they're angry about things that we shouldn't be doing in the first place, we could just kill two birds with one stone, start acting right, and disarm our enemies of their recruitment shtick that they use to launch wars against us. And then don't even get me started on Robert Dreyfus's article, Agents of Influence, also from The Nation. Or another one, for example, Julian Borger in The Guardian, the spies who pushed for war. Not that they were spies, they were the neocons. I don't know why you call them that. Should have said, the big, fat, soft-handed, egg-headed weenies who dreamed up this war for your son to go fight. And we're doing so in concert with the Israeli government. With the Prime Minister's office in the Ariel Sharon administration at the time. But anyway, so yeah, man, that should be a good time. I'm thinking it's going to be a good time. Here in just a moment, you're going to get to hear a spot for it. Again, that's the National Summit on, what's the damn title of it again? To reassess the American-Israel special relationship. And I think that what you'll hear there is that we ought to have a plain old relationship with Israel. Not that they ought to be our enemy. Not that America ought to hate Israel or anything like that. But just that this special relationship is costing us. plain old relationship would be bad enough. Thank you. Anyway, that's my take. It's natsummit.org if you want to find out all about it. It's the roster at antiwar.com. I mean, that's the old one. At scotthorton.org/interviews. That's the guest list at this thing. If you're a fan of this show, you'll be a fan of this national summit. All right, so here's some spots, and then I'm going to come right back and complain about a bunch of stuff. It's going to be great. ScottHorton.org. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future of Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon. Man, that song came in a second early and a few decibels too hot, I think. Well, whatever. Anyway, hey, it's the show. You know who's your enemy? John Kerry, the Secretary of State. I mean, assuming... Well, actually, no matter who you are in the world, I was going to say assuming you're an American, but... Yeah, actually, if you're anybody else, he's your enemy, too. It might be... He might be a little bit more obviously your enemy if you're a foreigner. But, John Kerry might... as well be the worst thing America has going right now. I don't know. I mean, I approve of his participation in the Iran nuclear deal. I can say that for him, but that's not even really him anyway, right? That was Laura Rosen's big scoop, is that William Burns, not Nicholas Burns, William Burns, the State Department weenie, was the one who went to Oman and worked out the deal with the Iranians behind the scenes before Kerry ever showed up. And thank God. I mean, would you expect John Kerry to be any good at anything? He was great in the movie The Edge of Darkness. Playing himself as the corrupt senator there. That was John Kerry, right? Anyway, so John Kerry, he's just horrible. And this is the, at least they let him grow his forehead wrinkles back again, which is nice. But Kerry decries new isolationism. Isolationism, really? That sounds pretty pro-Hitler or something to me. He says U.S. acts like a poor nation. This guy. Can't you just see him saying that at some dinner party or something? Yeah, a lot of us are poor, John. Not all of us are married to the ketchup queen. But anyway... Not all of us are born into the skull and bones like you, sir. But Reuters. John Kerry decried what he called a new isolationism. And by the way, the only reason I'm bringing this up is because there's a lot of little funny things in here other than just what a joke that is. I mean, you could say we have a declining empire, but if you say we have an ideology of one in America, then let me in on it. I would like to know. This show's numbers wouldn't seem to reflect that, but maybe that's just my personality defect, you know? I don't know. Anyway, so here he says he's decried a new isolationism in America and said we're acting like a poor nation. Speaking to reporters, Kerry inveighed against what he sees as a tendency within the United States to retreat from the world. Even as he defended the Obama administration's diplomatic efforts from Syria to the Israel-Palestinian conflict. So, right there you see the frame of this thing. To have active negotiations still counts as retreating. So you gotta give him only half credit. Like, well, it's, you know, it's okay, I guess, to negotiate instead of, I don't know what, bombing Palestine? Or nuking Damascus? It's half isolationism to seek a nonviolent solution to any of these things. And these are, of course, supposedly, well, certainly Israel-Palestine is supposed to be one of Kerry's achievements by the end of this thing. Yeah, right. But anyway, I mean, here the there's, what, 192, 93, 94, depends on how many secessions America is supporting or opposing at any given time around the world, but somewhere around 120, 130 countries with American bases and special forces training their militaries and, you know, training their officers, making their military establishment subordinate to ours to, you know, as great a degree as they possibly can. The only place where he could talk about retreat whatsoever would be Iraq and Afghanistan, where Iraq, he said he supported withdrawal from Iraq all along as a senator. And at least since, what, 06, I think he may have even opposed the surge for political reasons. Not like he cares if your neighbor's son gets killed over there or anything. And then the withdrawal from Afghanistan, okay, maybe that's happening, but it's happening on his watch. If he's really got a problem with that, what's he doing about it? The whole, sticking point is that Karzai won't go along with America's attempt to get him to sign the immunity deal for American war crimes from here on out. Well, wouldn't that be John Kerry's job to arrange that? Since he's the Secretary of State, but he can't. So any strategic retreat from the world that you could point to would be John Kerry's responsibility. And of course, when you're talking about ending the Afghan war, you're talking about ending the least popular war in all of American history, according to the polls. Less popular than Iraq in 08. Less popular than Vietnam in 72. Less popular than Korea in 51. So, in other words, the American people demand that anyway. You know, strategic retreat or not, it's his mandate. But then, here's his examples. He's not really criticizing the American people wanting to end the Afghan war. He only kind of implies that, right, by talking about retreat. There is no other retreat. Here's the best that he can come up with to demonstrate the new American isolationism. In comments tied to the budget that Obama is expected to present on Tuesday, Kerry suggested that tighter spending, in part at the behest of congressional Republicans, may limit U.S. clout around the world. John Kerry is attacking congressional Republicans for cutting the military budget. Really? In what universe? There's a new isolationism, Kerry said during a nearly one-hour discussion with a small group of reporters. We are beginning to behave like a poor nation, he added, saying some Americans do not perceive the connection between U.S. engagement abroad and the U.S. economy, their own jobs, and wider U.S. interests. Ha! I think perhaps the fact of the matter is that the American people are finally beginning to catch on and make exactly that connection. And you know what? I'd be willing to bet that John Kerry's not even lying when he spouts that crap. He sounds to me like just the kind of liberal Democrat idiot to believe that the American people in general benefit from the empire. Why else would he be doing this if it wasn't for all of our own good? Just ask him. He'll tell you. So, U.S. engagement abroad in the U.S. economy, the closest case you could make, and he does talk a little bit about some trade deal, is saying, yeah, well, we have to have trade deals and a global economy is in the best interest, the best economic interest of the people of America. Yeah, well, of course, that's true, but that doesn't have anything to do with 11 carrier battle groups. That doesn't have anything to do with carrying around 3,000 hydrogen bombs ready to kill people's cities at a moment's notice at any time for the indefinite future, holding the entire species of Homo sapiens hostage to American so-called interests. Doesn't include invading and occupying countries like Afghanistan and Iraq sailing the Persian Gulf, threatening Iran with all options on the table, which means first strike nuclear weapons. And that ain't hyperbole. I mean, Obama even announced a new nuclear posture where it used to be America threatened to use, had refused to rule out using nuclear weapons in a first strike against any other country in the world. And then Obama changed that and said, now we only threaten a nuclear first strike against any country that already has nukes or Iran. So, your jobs depend on a global economy, no doubt about that, but that doesn't have anything to do with American imperialism. You could have Ron Paul be the president and have a one-page long trade policy, which is no tariffs, let's trade, be friends, period at the end. And then, of course, wider U.S. interest means whatever are the whims of the American power elite. A lot of times, as you can tell, it's just looking for excuses to get the money spent on the weapons in the inventory. You know, all of us grew up with that. If you're my age, you grew up with everybody kind of knew that. That's a lot of what was going on in Vietnam, was they were just pumping and dumping the bomb industry. Everybody was making money, cranking the explosives out, and just keep it going. Just like Ron Paul says, you know, when it came to Plan Colombia, Joe Biden's Plan Colombia for poisoning, basically Agent Orange-type policy against coca growers there, that there is no Mothers Against Cocaine Abuse public interest group up there on Capitol Hill lobbying for that. You know who's up there lobbying for that? Bell Helicopter. Or whichever companies, the guys that make the Blackhawks. They're the ones up there lobbying for Plan Colombia. Is it because the helicopter manufacturers care the most about cocaine abuse in America and prefer that the price be so artificially high that people choose to become meth addicts instead? Is that their benevolent motive? Or they're just selling helicopters and they don't care who dies? They don't care... What's the life of a Colombian child to a helicopter salesman with a contract to the Pentagon? Nothing. So, that's where that comes from. Same as anything. It's all just special interest, corrupt interest. That's what special interest means. Corrupt ones who've never heard of a national interest before, only their own, would burn this country to the ground if they could benefit for one quarter. And then, so his other example of new isolationism is that Congress refused to back a war against Syria. You know, it's been 3 years since America launched an aggressive war, backing the Al-Qaeda suicide bombers in Syria in a quote-unquote covert op. Doesn't count. It's been since 2011 that America launched an aggressive war of regime change against a country that had never attacked us. And that counts as peace, aka isolationism, to John Kerry, the Secretary of State, who would burn our country to the ground if that's what it took to fuel his war machine, that he could use it to burn down some other country too. Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for CashIntoCoins.com. So you want to buy some Bitcoins? CashIntoCoins.com makes it fast, easy, and safe to get Bitcoins. Just deposit the money into their account at any of the major banks they support, and then just email them a picture of the receipt and your Bitcoin address, and you get your Bitcoins. Almost always the same day it clears. In a tough, competitive new market, CashIntoCoins.com has the advantage. A great system and great customer service to keep you coming back. That's CashIntoCoins.com. Just click the link in the right margin at scotthorton.org. On March 7th at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., the Council for the National Interest is co-hosting the first ever national summit to reassess the U.S.-Israel special relationship. Confirmed speakers include Walt Scheuer, Giraldi, McGovern, Katowski, Porter, McConnell, Weiss, Raimondo, USS Liberty survivor Ernie Gallo, as well as co-sponsors Alison Ware of If Americans Knew and the great Grant Smith of the Institute for Research Middle East Policy. That's the national summit to reassess the U.S.-Israel special relationship. Friday, March the 7th, all day at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. NatSummit.org.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. Is that kind of a letdown after that build up there? Hey, welcome back to the thing. Hey, I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. I ain't the best broadcaster, but I'm right about everything. So If you ever need to know what's the right position on anything, just listen to what I say and mimic that, and then you'll be good on everything too. Really, you don't even need to tune in. Just oppose everything always, and you'll be fine. In fact, I don't mean to tell my audience to beat it, but you don't really need me. You just need to oppose everything always. And whenever someone comes up with a reason why you should not oppose, then you should still oppose anyway. Their reason isn't good enough. You know that. So there you go. Oppose everything all the time. Class dismissed. We can all go back to listen to Beastie Boys. All right, well, for example, here's something that could be opposed, might need opposing. American intervention in Ukraine. Who the hell does this Barack Obama guy think he is? George W. Bush or something? And this Victoria Nuland, she's the Undersecretary of State for European Affairs, the wife of Robert Kagan, Bill Kristol's alter ego. God, can you imagine having that on your gravestone? What a waste of a life, you know? Precious human life. Being Robert Kagan. Anyway, so this Victoria Nuland, she gave this speech back in December for a group of Exxon officials or something. And what she says to them was that, yeah, we've spent $5 billion promoting democracy in Ukraine, which means promoting Timoshenko's party and affiliates and whoever, right? The people that they want in power. Only here's my thing about that. $5 billion? Really? Since over how long? Because that's a lot. That's more than we give Israel in a year, at least officially. $5 billion. And, wow, did it really cost $5 billion to put on the show we've just seen? That's a pretty expensive coup for how easy they pulled it off, you know? And I don't know. I appreciate that Vladimir Putin is so far basically doing nothing. He called for some military exercises in Western Russia. I don't think he's probably going to move the troops in there. I mean, if you were him, wouldn't you just wait out the stupid, foolish, clumsy checkers playing Americans and kick their ass right out of there after just a couple of plot twists in 6 months or something like that? Who thinks the Americans are going to really get over on Vladimir Putin in Ukraine? And especially when, as everybody knows, and people are really worried about this now, what's going to happen on the Crimean Peninsula? Because that's what really counts. It's separated from Russia by land. And it's, I guess, what, 60-40 pro-Russian population there. And it's where the Russians stationed their Black Sea fleet. And they're not giving it up. And, you know, for that matter, pretty much all of eastern Ukraine is, you know, I wouldn't say in the Russian camp. I think they're, you know, pro-independence, but certainly they would lean toward Russia compared to leaning toward even their own countrymen in the West, it seems like. And certainly before they lean toward Europe. And as Eric Margulies explained, a lot of that is for, in fact, I've read this other places too, a lot of that is for economic reasons. They have Soviet-era industry in eastern Ukraine that would be completely bankrupt if they had to compete with all of Western Europe in a free trade zone and all that. They need protectionism to prop up those businesses for their local economy. And just like West Germany suffered a hit by incorporating commie East Germany into reunified Germany, just as really American manufacturing took a hit by the end of communism in China and the opening up of China. That's sort of our East Germany in a way. And so that's what, the people of Eastern Ukraine fear is, one of the things that they're really worried about is suffering the economic consequences for their local communities, for their, you know, completely old, inefficient businesses that haven't had to compete with new, modern, efficient ones. So that's a big part of that. But anyway, point being,
the Americans have gotten their coup so far, and the parties favored by the Americans have seized power there, including a bunch of neo-Nazi brown shirts parading around giving Hitler salutes, and I don't know if they're wearing growing out the mustaches yet, but they're running around with SS lightning bolts and iron crosses everywhere, and their hero, as Justin Romano was explaining on the show yesterday, their icon of this right-wing movement is this guy Bandera, something like that, who fought on the side of the Nazis against the commies in the Second World War, which I don't, yeah, there was no libertarian side there. It was the, and it, there were no Democrats or Republicans either. It was the commies, the Soviets, versus the Nazi Germans there. And anybody who was on either side, you could tell why they're so polarized over there. You know, I saw footage of these right-wing, you know, neo-Nazi types kicking an old woman on her knees. And I'm going, holy crap. And then the caption is, she was on her way to put flowers at Lenin's statue. I'm not saying it's okay to kick an old woman for that, but really, she was going to put flowers on Lenin's statue? That's the kind of polarization that these guys have going on. You know, not just pro-Russia, but pro-Soviets. And pro-Nazis on either side. Not that they're the totality of either side, but still, that's, how would you like to have Nazis in your Republican coalition or outright communists in your Democrat coalition? Pretty hard for either side to compromise with each other at that point, right? Anyway, so here's the thing that's on the far side of the planet that America shouldn't be involved in whatsoever, and but what amounts to an American border dispute with Russia in Eastern Europe, where America isn't by nature of our geography and everything. It just couldn't possibly be further from our true interests. And you know what? What if the Russians have so much influence in Ukraine that they make sure that any pipelines going through Ukraine, the Russians get a cut of or get some political say over which direction it goes from there or whatever. So what? Is it really that important for your global strategy? You have to control every freaking pipeline on the planet? It's stupid. Messing around. I mean, okay. For example, Susan Rice, the National Security Advisor, speaking for the President of the United States, goes on TV and warns the Russians, and Kerry, I don't know Kerry's exact quotes, but he's been saying some pretty belligerent stuff too. But she talks about how it would be a grave mistake if Russia were to do this or that. Now, it's true that politicians can back down from anything if they want. They can completely change the talking point, lie their ass off, pretend that's what they said all along, whatever, and that's fine. But they can also find themselves very painted into a corner by statements like that. And so the question naturally arises, does it not? Hey, Susan Rice, oh yeah? What are you going to do about it if he does? If Vladimir Putin says, no, the election of 2010 was won by the regional home party or whatever the hell it is, and their guy gets to be the president still until the next election in December, like in the deal. And they move their army into Ukraine. What's Susan Rice going to do about it? What can America possibly do about it other than get in a nuclear war with them over it? Nothing. They can't do anything. Put sanctions on Russia? Go down that road? And here's what's funny. I can't decide to talk about next. Should it be what to talk about next? Should it be Pakistan? The U.S. won't let us finish the pipeline to Iran that we want to do. You know, the peace pipeline that could eventually go through Pakistan and India into China. Wow, wouldn't that be peaceful and wonderful? I mean, it's not like it would guarantee peace forever or anything like that. But don't you think that's a good idea to have Iran and even Afghanistan, perhaps, but especially Pakistan and India and China all cooperating on a giant oil hydrocarbon pipeline together? Making money together off of one big project like that? That sounds like it ought to be the future of humanity to me. And yet, no, America. The North Americans are over screwing around preventing the Pakistanis from building an oil pipeline from Iran into India. Into Pakistan and on to India. Well, I guess I went ahead and I did go that way. But here, I'll go back now the other direction, which was this piece here by Josh Rogan today in the Daily Beast. Top Republicans call for a return to the Cold War. Really? Communism's been dead, except in North Korea and Cuba and Washington, D.C., for 25 years. Not good enough. Top Republicans call for a return to Cold War. TheDailyBeast.com. The top lawmakers on the House and Senate Armed Services Committees. Oh, my God. What? The top lawmakers on the House and Senate Armed Services Committees said Thursday that the world would be better off if the Cold War was still on and if Obama wasn't cutting the defense budget. Yeah. Them and John Kerry, Obama's Secretary of State, say that. Cutting the defense budget. What a joke. Please tell me you're not believing that for one moment, right? Okay, good. The current crisis in the Ukraine and the looming crisis on the Korean Peninsula would be much easier to manage if the Cold War was still going strong, according to House Armed Services Committee Chairman Buck McKeon and Senate Armed Services Ranking Republican James Inhofe. I look back wistfully at the Cold War, Inhofe said Thursday at a breakfast meeting with reporters. There were two superpowers. They knew what we had. We knew what they had. Mutually assured destruction meant something. Doesn't mean anything anymore. Now we have these people who are not rational, not logical. They're nuts. Yeah, Putin's nuts compared to Andropov or Khrushchev or Stalin. Putin is nuts, really. And of course, just look at his analogy. What is he talking about? If this was the Cold War, then Ukraine would be the absolute unquestioned domain of the Soviet Union. And America would be the ones restrained. You know, the not rational, not logical nutsos messing around. We still know what they have, and they still know what we have as far as nuclear weapons. Us and Russia. What he's really admitting is he would be restrained if the Soviet Union ruled all of Eastern Europe. But without them in America's way, they're not logical. They're nuts. They're going to go ahead and pick whatever fight they can all the way to Russia's borders. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager who provides his subscribers with a very real window into his investments, updating them on every move he makes in the markets. Right now, Mike's anticipating a bear and is dumping all the stocks while the getting is good, investing instead in gold and the commodities. Protect your assets and learn the wise ways of the markets. WallStreetWindow.com. And check out Mike Swanson's great contribution to the history of the rise of the American Empire and the war state, available at scotthorton.org/Amazon. Hey, all Scott Horton here. Don't you want a bust to Murray Rothbard for your desk at work? A Ludwig von Mises for your bookshelf at home? A Harry Brown, a Ron Paul as a gift for a friend? Check out these awesome busts of your libertarian heroes at myheroesthink.com. They come in 6 or 9 inch sizes, and now in color, too. Of course, gold, silver, or bronze. I've got the Harry Brown one on the bookshelf in my office, and I love it. Just click the banner ad in the right margin at scotthorton.org and enter promo code ScottHortonShow to save $5. That's myheroesthink.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. And let's see. Oh, before we talk NSA stuff, what time is it? I guess we'll have to say, well, I don't know. We'll see what happens. Yeah, we'll probably save NSA till next hour. Check out. So yesterday was the anniversary of the first World Trade Center bombing. 21 years ago. First World Trade Center bombing, 1993. And tomorrow is the anniversary of the initial raid on the Branch Davidians, February the 28th, 1993. So I want to talk about both of those things a little bit here. First of all, on the World Trade Center thing, I recently watched, did you guys know about this? Did you see this? Did you hear about this? You can watch the whole damn thing on YouTube. It's a movie called Path to Paradise. Path to Paradise. and it's a HBO original movie. It's pretty good. You know, like that one about the Bradley that I always forget the name of that's really good with Robin Hood Men in Tights? Princess Bride. The blonde-haired guy. He's the Bradley, dude. Anyway. So they also did this HBO original movie called Path to Paradise. And what it is it's the story about how the FBI woulda, coulda, shoulda stopped the first World Trade Center bombing. And they do a really damn good job in there of sticking to the facts and who's who and who did what. Except, and you know what? I'm not the world's expert on this. I really, you know, should ask Peter Lance or somebody like that. I think Peter Lance probably knows more than anybody else about it. But I believe that the informant actually was working with the group and had already basically been hired on to cook the bomb. He was going to be the bomb maker. And it was then that he was called off of the plot. Rather than the way they make it seem like he was called off by the FBI bosses before they even decided to blow up the World Trade Center. But I think the World Trade Center had already been targeted, and they had a plan to switch out the bomb with inert explosives. And then after the informant was pulled off of the case, then they brought in Ramzi Youssef, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's nephew. And he's the guy that built the bomb that killed 6 people and could have toppled, was made to topple one tower into the other. Imagine if instead of being damaged at the top from the planes and falling straight down, if one tower had been broken in 93, had been broken at the bottom and fallen over from the bottom and perhaps even knocked the other tower over, breaking it at the bottom or halfway up or something like that, falling onto all the neighboring buildings and who knows what, 110, 115 story buildings there. And that was late in the afternoon, too, when the buildings were absolutely full of people, too. But anyway, thank goodness it wasn't that bad. But that movie, Path to Paradise, I think does a pretty good job of explaining just really how lousy the FBI is at everything. You know, they sort of try to play it off like, oh, if only the New Jersey state troopers had told us this or that. But no, it was the FBI. I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. It was the FBI that took pictures of basically Omar Abdelrahman's guys, Egyptian Islamic Jihad in the United States, what became, you know, merged with the Azzam group and became Al-Qaeda. They first took pictures of them at the shooting range back in 1989. And then after Nosair, I think it was Nosair, killed Rabbi Kahane, the right-wing Zionist, greater Israel nationalist in New York, the FBI treated that like a lone gunman assassination thing and completely refused to recognize that it was part of a group operation whatsoever. And then you have the entire scandal of the World Trade Center bombing where their source could have. If you read the New York Times version of the thing by Ralph Blumenthal, it's October 28th, 1993, New York Times, if you want to look that up. He has the transcript. In fact, I have the audio, don't I? I have the audio, guys, of Ahmad Salem talking about how they had this plan to stop the World Trade Center attack, and then it didn't work. Let me see here. Salem. I do have it.
Let's see what this is. Everything was submitted with a receipt.
Yeah.
And now it's questionable.
It's not questionable. It's like a little out of ordinary.
Okay.
You know.
All right. I don't think it was. If that's what you think, guys, fine. But I don't think that, because we was start already building the bomb, which is went off in the World Trade Center. It was built by supervision from the Bureau and the DA. And we was all informed about it, and we know that the bomb start to be built. By who? By your confidential informant. What a wonderful, great case. Well. And then he put his head in the sand and said, oh, no, that's not true. He is son of a bitch. Okay. Oh. It's built with a different way in another place, and that's it.
So, I'm sorry, I don't have the whole transcript of this, and I'm not, obviously, I just remembered I had the clip. I'm not prepared to go through it word for word or whatever, but I believe it's pretty obvious what we're hearing there is the informant confronting the FBI agents after the fact with, no, don't try to play it down. We had this plan to thwart the bombing, and then you guys called off the whole damn thing. And, you know, I think in Peter Lance's, not to put words in his mouth or whatever, I think Peter Lance's rendition of this is that the FBI supervisors there overseeing Agent John Antisev and Nancy Floyd, Agents John Antisev and Nancy Floyd, they just were all interested in John Gotti and the Italian mob, and they didn't want to learn Arabic. They didn't want to know about this crap. It's some blind sheikh and some Egyptian this or that. And so that was mostly what was behind their failure. It's the public choice theory of police work. Each of these pigs is interested in his own self and what he thinks and what he wants and not what's the right thing to do. As Peter Lance said, they could have just sat on these guys' mailbox. They all shared this one little mailbox slot or whatever. And the FBI could have just monitored the hell out of all of them and put the whole thing together if they'd done the minimal amount of police work, which the actual agents wanted to do, which their bosses wouldn't let them do. And anyway, it's a huge scandal. 6 people died. And also, because they covered it up and because they weren't honest about it, they continued to fail on the rest of Al-Qaeda's war against the United States through the 1990s. And Peter Lance definitely makes this case. You can hear my previous interview of him about this. And I haven't read all of his books, but I have read 1,000 Years for Revenge, which is really freaking good. And the point of it is, at least from the FBI's side of the story, is that the fact is, if they had done their due diligence after they filmed these kooks at the shooting range, then they could have at least prevented, maybe not prevented, but at least solved and blamed everyone responsible for the conspiracy to murder the rabbi. And then they had to cover up the fact that they could have stopped that maybe if they had done their job before. So in covering that up, they didn't follow all the leads that they could have picked up on the raids from the apartment of the guy who had murdered the rabbi and the rest of that information. And so because they didn't follow up on that as well as they should have, they had the first World Trade Center bombing. And then because they, we have to cover up the fact that we could have stopped that. So in covering up that, they didn't follow all the leads, which could have led them to prevent possibly the attack on the National Guard barracks in Saudi Arabia and then the Khobar Towers attack. Those were in 95 and in 96. And then those failures to follow up all those leads, they blame Khobar on Iran, for Christ's sake. Oh, yeah, is Saudi Hezbollah. Whatever, man. It was the Martians did it, too, I bet. I heard China did it. If you want, you know, whatever. I heard the Palestinians did it. How about that one? No, it was Al-Qaeda that did the Khobar Towers attack, and because they didn't do their job there, then Al-Qaeda was successful in carrying out the, or at least there's no one even trying to stop them, when they did the embassy attacks in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and Nairobi, Kenya in 1998, and then on it goes through September 11th. And you could see why the CIA and the FBI hated each other's guts. They all have plenty of reason, good reason, to keep information from each other, right? I'm going to turn this investigation over to you clowns, they all said in unison, and they're all right, you know? So, anyway, that's a big part of Peter Lance's narrative of the run-up, the decade-long run-up to the September 11th attacks, was the FBI covering up the fact that if they'd only done their job before, they could have prevented the last attack. And every time they cover up, they help the bad guys get away with the next one, too, over and over again. And then also, I got to talk about the Branch Davidian thing, and I guess I don't really have too much time. But you know what? I'm going to do a whole thing about it on April the 19th, like I always do, because I think it's really important. But I'll just go ahead and just mention real quick some sources. If you don't know anything about Waco, but you'd like to learn about what really happened there, you can watch online for free Waco, The Rules of Engagement, and Waco, A New Revelation. And you follow up with the FLIR Project. But I think you can't find the whole thing of the FLIR Project. Online anymore. But anyway, if you just go to scotthorton.org/documentaries, you can find Waco, The Rules of Engagement, and Waco, A New Revelation. And that's basically what you need to know there. But the point that I would make is that what was such an aberration about what happened there was that the people fought back and won on the first day. And because they were way out in the country, the reinforcements couldn't arrive immediately. And because of the way the thing played out, it led to this siege that lasted for 6 weeks. And then, of course, to the
the raid with machine guns and fire killed the rest of the survivors 51 days later. But that kind of military-style raid that they used on the Branch Davidians has become a daily occurrence in this country. Waco every day. People said, no more Wacos. Waco every day in America since then. Man, you need some new stickers for the back of your truck. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. Aren't you sick and tired of everyone else being wrong about everything all the time? Well, now you can tell them all what's right with some stickers from LibertyStickers.com. At LibertyStickers.com, they're against everything, so you know they're good on your issue, too. Whether it's the wars, police state, gun laws, the left and right, or the president, LibertyStickers.com has hundreds of choices so you can find just the right words to express your opposition and contempt for those who would violate your rights. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. And you know what? I'm not done talking about the goddamn First World Trade Center bombing in Waco for a second here. I meant to say about the First World Trade Center bombing and about that movie, Path to Paradise, which you can find on YouTube and wherever you want. HBO original movie, which you can watch for free as soon as you plan on it. And it's not necessarily the highest quality rip, but who cares? It's good. One of the things they do admit in there, and they contradict themselves, of course, but they do admit in there that this is all about Israel. And it's all about the dictatorship of Hosni Mubarak in Egypt. And why in the world they even talk about, and you could read this in a worse way if you want to, but I don't think it's necessary. I think it's actually right that the reason, and they talk about this in the movie, why did the CIA intervene to let the blind Sheikh Omar Abdelrahman into the country in the first place when he was on the terrorist watch list? And the answer is, because they were all friends that worked together in the Afghan jihad. So they're like, oh yeah, we like that guy, let him in. Now, maybe there's more to it than that, but I don't really think so. Could be, but nah. But the point being that these guys say over and over again, it's about Israel. And people get diverted. It's so easy, I guess, to be kind of fascinated with the mystery of some alien religion from across the sea or whatever, where people talk about all the magic things that are going to happen to them after they die and whatever, and get caught up in that and ignore the part that, no, they already explained, really, that they're avenging America's support for Israel. And they even have the part in the movie where people are suspecting that maybe the Serbs did it. And Ramzi Youssef makes a phone call to 911. Says it wasn't the Serbs, it was us, the 6th Battalion of the Liberation Army of Palestine. Whatever, I made the battalion number up, I forgot which part, but whatever. That was what he claimed, and that was his letter to the New York Times, too. He wrote all about it. And then, when Ramzi Youssef was almost caught in the Philippines in 1995... what happened was he was hanging out with his buddies, Abdul Hakim Murad and Wali Khan Amin Shah, and they were making explosives, and they had all these different plans. It was discovered they had all these different plans, including a plot to kill the Pope, to kill Bill Clinton, to they had a September 11th-style hijacking attack, which they say Murad came up with, and then they also had a plan that was to bomb 11 planes over the Pacific Ocean all at the same time, called Bojinka, Serbo-Croatian for loud bang. And what happened was they were mixing explosives and it caught fire, the recipe caught fire, and they ran away. But then Youssef sent the other two back, I think both of the other two back, to get the laptop, and they were caught. And then they admitted everything, and the laptop was open, and they found all the blueprints and the documents and the whatever, whatever. But Ramzi Youssef escaped to Pakistan, where he wasn't arrested for another, I forget how many months or a year and a half or something. And then they ended up getting him. But then Wali Khan Amin Shah and Abdul Hakim Murad, they said the same thing. Yeah, it's about Palestine. And Ramzi Youssef at his sentencing, and in fact all the rest of Sheikh Omar Abdelrahman's guys, they said it's about Palestine. And of course, American support for Hosni Mubarak for 30 years, the military dictator of Egypt, which the people of Egypt all basically united to overthrow in 2011, was because that was what Israel wanted. That was what was necessary, bribing the entire Egyptian establishment to tolerate Hosni Mubarak and his dictatorship, and bribing that dictatorship to go along with the you know, whatever Israel's policy on Gaza is at any given time, which is mostly always keep that border to Egypt closed and to bribe the government of Egypt to pretend that they don't hate Israel, to keep, you know, that's our part of the Camp David Accord that Jimmy Carter broke, was we'll pay you to go along with this the whole time. And of course, the Israelis have completely, everyone's ignored, and the Israelis have gotten away with never living up to their end of the deal, which was they're supposed to get out of the West Bank and Gaza, according to that old Camp David agreement from back in the 70s, if you believe that. But anyway, there was a reason why Hosni Mubarak had to clamp down on people like Rahman, and there was a reason why that made Rahman an enemy of the Americans. Because it was the Americans who were the ones who were paying Mubarak, who are propping him up in power. I mean, look, if your country's the global superpower, world empire, and somebody's got a dictatorship, and your global empire, world superpower, strike that, reverse it, same thing again, is paying that dictator billions of dollars, then your government, at least, has to accept 100% responsibility for that dictatorship. You can't say, well, it's an Egyptian dictatorship and we just back it. No, the whole thing is made in the USA when we're paying them as much as we pay Israel this whole time. And that was what drove the merger between Egyptian Islamic Jihad and Osama bin Laden's takeover of the Azzam group and the creation, really, of Al-Qaeda, what they call Al-Qaeda, starting in the mid-1990s. Was because they had these things in common. They believed they needed to attack America first to basically, recreate the jihad against the Russians, bait America into invading and spending all their money and going bankrupt, trying to enforce their authority on the outer fringes of the empire. And then after forcing us out in bankruptcy, bleeding, then they could go back to their local jihads against all their local governments that they hate. But they said, as long as the Americans pay our dictators billions, we'll never be able to overthrow them. And so that was what brought them here. And if you read bin Laden's statements in his declarations of war, his fatwas of 1996 and 1998, that's what they say. It's about support for the dictators. It's about, of course, occupying the Saudi desert so we could bomb our no longer compliant dictator, Saddam Hussein, in Iraq and blockade his people to death by somewhere in the high hundreds of thousands, maybe a million people in the Clinton years. And support for Israel in their, at that time at least, permanent occupations of southern Lebanon and continuing to this day, of course, occupations of Gaza and the West Bank. And so people ought to know that it isn't a matter of, yeah, once you believe in Islam hard enough, you become a suicide bomber or some crap like that. No, it was American foreign policy that got us into this mess. And that doesn't mean whoever fights back against us is a good person. It just means that our government got us into this mess. Right? So people need to get their head wrapped around this, especially when we've been at this for so long now in a row. And then, to expand more on the Waco thing, you may still believe that those people had it coming somehow. But the fact of the matter is, and I got all the sound bites here, but I'll spare you. But the Texas Rangers, the head of the Texas Rangers and the local sheriff and all those guys said, these people were not criminals. I mean, people, I guess to this day, they say that Koresh had some statutory rape things, whatever. But the local sheriff's department and the CPS can handle that, and they had determined there was nothing to go on there, at least for now, at that time. And, of course, that has nothing to do with Bill Clinton sending the Army's Combat Applications Group, Delta Force B Squadron, to massacre all of those people to death on April 19th, 1993, which, of course, he doesn't need to, but he admits was his order. He admitted years later, after pinning the whole thing on Janet Reno, he was being deposed by Judicial Watch about the fact that he was sitting on the couch with John Wong and James Riotti, his Chinese intelligence connections. Thanks for bribing everybody's mom into reelecting me in 1996, guys. As he was watching the Waco thing burn, he was sitting there with Riotti and Wong. And so in the context of, you know, James Rorty paying Bill Clinton to put John Wong in the Commerce Department, licensing missile technology transfers to China, and then bribing your mom into voting to reelect him in 96 with the money. Judicial Watch asked him about Waco. So you were watching Waco on the big screen TV, watching it burn with John Wong and James Rorty, huh, Bill? And the president, the sitting president at the time, admitted it was at the very end of his presidency in the year 2000. Could have been 99, but I think it was in, no, it would have been in 2000. And he said, yeah, you know, it was the hardest thing that I did, giving the order to go ahead and go that day, but they came to me and, you know, he gave the same excuse of the child abuse or whatever. But of course, we all know that the Attorney General, Janet Reno, does not have the authority to order the Combat Applications Group, Team B, Delta Force, you know, killers into action against American citizens. Now, maybe she can have some goons write up a memo pretending it's legal somehow, but she can't tell them what to do. They're the president's private army, and everybody knows that, the Delta Force. That's the top tier of American special forces. They don't do what the attorney general says. There's no law that applies to them. They belong to Bill Clinton. We all knew, but he admitted that he's the one who gave the order and killed those people. And he should be doing life in prison for that, right? 86 counts of murder, premeditated murder, and illegally using the American military and so-called law enforcement operation. If that's what you call machine gunning and burning people to death. Oh, well, don't worry, there's no law. Hey, Al Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all. QR Silver Commodity Discs. The first ever QR code 1 ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks. Man, I need to get some new bumper music. I'm sick of this all this old crap. All right. Well, anyway. Hey, I'm Scott. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. And so now let's talk about the latest from the Snowden files. This one is Spencer Ackerman. Over at The Guardian. Yahoo webcam images from millions of users intercepted by GCHQ. That is the British NSA. Britain's surveillance agency, GCHQ, with aid from the U.S. National Security Agency, intercepted and stored the webcam images of millions of internet users not suspected of wrongdoing, secret documents reveal. GCHQ files dating between 2008 and 2010 explicitly state that a surveillance program codenamed Optic Nerve collected still images of Yahoo webcam chats in bulk and saved them to agency databases, regardless of whether individual users were an intelligence target or not. In 1 6-month period in 2008 alone, the agency collected webcam imagery, including substantial quantities of sexually explicit communications from more than 1.8 million Yahoo user accounts globally. Yahoo reacted furiously to the webcam interception when approached by The Guardian. The company denied any prior knowledge of the program, accusing the agencies of, quote, a whole new level of violation of our users' privacy. GCHQ does not have the technical means to make sure no images of UK or US citizens are collected and stored by the system, and there are no restrictions under UK law to prevent Americans' images from being accessed by British analysts without an individual warrant. The documents also chronicle GCHQ's sustained struggle to keep the large store of sexually explicit imagery collected by Optic Nerve away from the eyes of its staff, though there is little discussion about the privacy implications of storing this material in the first place. Optic Nerve, the documents provided by NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden's show, began as a prototype in 2008 and was still active in 2012, according to an internal GCHQ wiki page accessed that year. The system, eerily reminiscent of the telescreens evoked in George Orwell's 1984, was used for experiments in automated facial recognition to monitor GCHQ's existing targets and to discover new targets of interest. Such searches could be used to try to find terror suspects or criminals, making use of multiple anonymous user IDs. Rather than collecting webcam chats in their entirety, the program saved one image every 5 minutes from the user's feeds, partly to comply with human rights legislation and also to avoid overloading GCHQ's servers. The documents describe these users as, quote, unselected, intelligence agency parlance for bulk rather than targeted collection. One document even likened the program's, quote, bulk access to Yahoo webcam image events, end quote, to a massive digital police mug book of previously arrested individuals. Quote, face detection, this is quoting from the documents, face detection has the potential to aid selection of useful images for, quote, mugshots or even for face recognition by accessing the angle of the face, it reads. The best images are the ones where the person is facing the camera with their face upright. The agency did make efforts to limit analysts' ability to see webcam images, restricting bulk searches to metadata only. However, analysts were shown the faces of people with similar usernames to surveillance targets, potentially dragging in large numbers of innocent people. One document tells agency staff they were allowed to display webcam images associated with similar Yahoo identifiers to your known target. Optic Nerve was based on collecting information from GCHQ's huge network of internet cable taps, which was then processed and fed into systems provided by the NSA. Webcam information was fed into NSA's X-Keyscore search tool, and NSA research was used to build the tool which identified Yahoo's webcam traffic. Bulk surveillance on Yahoo users was begun, the document said, because, quote, Yahoo webcam is known to be used by GCHQ targets. Programs like Optic Nerve, which collect information in bulk from largely anonymous user IDs, are unable to filter out information from U.S. or U.K. citizens. Unlike the NSA, GCHQ is not required by U.K. law to minimize or remove domestic citizens' information from its databases. However, additional legal authorizations are required before analysts can search for the data of individuals likely to be in the British Isles at the time of the search. There are no such legal safeguards for searches on people believed to be in the U.S. or the other allied Five Eyes nations, Australia, New Zealand, and Canada. GCHQ insists all of its activities are necessary, proportionate, and in accordance with U.K. law. The documents also show that GCHQ trialed automatic searches based on facial recognition technology for people resembling existing GCHQ targets. Quote, if you search for similar IDs to your target, you will be able to request automatic comparison of the face and the similar IDs to those in your target ID. The updated document from GCHQ's internal wiki information site noted this capability was, quote, now closed, but shortly to return. The privacy risks of mass collection from video sources have long been known to the NSA and GCHQ, as a research document from the mid-2000s noted. One of the greatest hindrances to exploiting video data is the fact that the vast majority of videos received have no intelligence value whatsoever, such as pornography, commercials, movie clips, and family home movies. They complain. Sexually explicit webcam material proved to be a particular problem for GCHQ, as one document delicately put it, quote, unfortunately, it would appear that a surprising number of people use webcam conversations to show intimate parts of their body to the other person. Also, the fact that the Yahoo software allows more than one person to view a webcam stream without necessarily sending a reciprocal stream means that it appears to be used, sometimes to be used for broadcasting pornography. End quote. The document estimates that between 3 and 11% of the Yahoo webcam imagery harvested by GCHQ contains undesirable nudity. Discussing efforts to make the interface safe to use, it noted that current naive pornography detectors assess the amount of flesh in any given shot, and so attracted lots of false positives by incorrectly tagging shots of people's faces as pornography. GCHQ did not make any specific attempts to prevent the collection or storage of explicit materials, the documents suggest, but did eventually compromise by excluding images in which software had not detected any faces from search results, a bid to prevent many of the lewd shots being seen by analysts. The system was not perfect at stopping those images from reaching the eyes of GCHQ staff, though. An internal guide cautioned prospective Optic Nerve users that, quote, there is no perfect ability to censor material which may be offensive. Users who may be uncomfortable about such material are advised not to open them. further notes that under GCHQ's offensive material policy, the dissemination of offensive material is a disciplinary offense. Once collected, metadata associated with the videos can be valuable to the intelligence agencies as the images themselves. It is not fully clear from the documents how much access the NSA has to the Yahoo webcam trove itself, though all of the policy documents were available to NSA analysts through their routine information sharing. A previously revealed NSA metadata repository, codename Arena, has what documents describe as a protocol class for webcam information. In its statement to The Guardian, Yahoo strongly condemned the optic nerve program and said it had no awareness of or involvement with the GCHQ collection. Quote, "We were not aware of, nor would we condone, this reported activity," said a spokeswoman. "This report, if true, represents a whole new level of violation of our users' privacy that is completely unacceptable, and we strongly call on the world's governments to reform surveillance law consistent with the principles outlined in December. We are committed to preserving our users' trust and security." Yeah. Yahoo has been one of the most outspoken technology companies objecting to NSA's bulk surveillance. It filed a transparency lawsuit with the secret U.S. Surveillance Court to disclose a 2007 case in which it was compelled to provide customer data to the surveillance agency, and it railed against the NSA's reported interception of information in transit between its data centers. Yeah, after it was in The Guardian. The documents do not refer to any specific court orders permitting collection of Yahoo's webcam imagery, but GCHQ mass collection is governed by the UK's Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act and requires certification by the Foreign Secretary, currently William Hague. The optic nerve documentation shows legalities were being considered as new capabilities were being developed, discussing adding automated facial matching, for example. Analysts agreed to test a system before firming up his legal status for everyday use. It was agreed that the legalities of such a capability would be considered once it had been developed, that the general principle applied would be that if the accuracy of the algorithm was such that it was useful to the analyst, i.e. the number of spurious results was low, then it was likely to be proportionate. The 2008 document reads, proportionate meaning within their loophole for violating your rights. The document continues, "This is allowed for research purposes, but at the point where the results are shown to analysts for operational use, the proportionality and legality questions must be more carefully considered." Optic nerve was just one of a series of GCHQ efforts at biometric detection, whether for target recognition or general security. While the documents do not detail efforts at as wide scale as those against Yahoo users, one presentation discusses with interest the potential and capabilities of the Xbox 360's Kinect camera, saying it generated fairly normal webcam traffic and was being evaluated as part of a wider program. Documents previously revealed in The Guardian show the NSA were exploring the video capabilities of game consoles for surveillance purposes. Microsoft, the maker of Xbox, faced a privacy backlash last year when details emerged that the camera bundled with its new console, the Xbox One, would be always on by default. Beyond webcams and consoles, GCHQ and the NSA looked at building more detailed and accurate facial recognition tools, such as iris recognition cameras. Think Tom Cruise in Minority Report, one presentation noted. Right, that was me saying, remember Tom Cruise, Minority Report, taking a picture of your eyeball everywhere? Yeah, that was what the NSA was saying. Yeah, this is what we're trying to develop here, guys. Remember Tom Cruise in Minority Report? Yeah. The same presentation talks about the strange means the agencies used to try and test such systems, including whether they could be tricked. One way of testing this was to use contact lenses on detailed mannequins. To this end, GCHQ has a dummy nicknamed The Head, one document noted. In a statement, a GCHQ spokesman said, "It is a long-standing policy, we don't comment. Furthermore, it's totally legal, don't worry about it." NSA declined to respond. Go ask GCHQ, they said. NSA doesn't break the law, boilerplate. There you go. Spencer Ackerman in The Guardian today, brand new Snowden documents, Yahoo webcam images from millions of users intercepted by GCHQ. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy.
Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com.
Nah, I didn't interview anybody today. Just me blabbing. At least I'm good on everything, you know? This is the Scott Horton Show. I'm him, Scott Horton. My website is scotthorton.org. And you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at /Scott Horton Show. If you're into that, retweet me, man. Like and share my posts if you like sharing posts and liking them. So, yeah. The good news is Tom Woods interviewed me today. I don't know if I did that good of a job, man. It's all right. We talked about Ukraine and about Iraq. They really liked me. His audience really liked me last time. All good comments on the YouTube and his blog and stuff I saw, so. I think this one was probably not as good, but hey, I tried my very best. So that'll be on the Tom Woods Show tomorrow if you're interested in that. Yeah, so plenty to talk about. Covered a lot on the show today. I don't want to talk about that. It cares about that. Ooh, I could talk about that. Oh, I always like talking about this, too. It's hard to choose sometimes. All these different things to complain about. Only two segments left. Time ticking away while I try to decide. Let's talk about the cop shooting this disabled Vietnam veteran for no reason whatsoever. This one is in the Daily Mail. Disabled Vietnam vet. Well, he was over there fighting for our freedom. Disabled Vietnam vet, 70 years old, shot in the stomach by police as he reached for his cane during a traffic stop. Luckily, the cop is a lousy shot. And Bobby Kniep is expected to make a full recovery. A disabled Vietnam vet was shot in the stomach by police in South Carolina as he reached for his cane during a traffic stop. Bobby Kniep, 70, is recovering from emergency surgery after York County Deputy Terrence Knox fired several times on Tuesday evening. Mr. Kniep had been pulled over near Clover for an expired license. Really? They mean license plate? The registration sticker? Are you saying his driver's license was expired? How do you pull somebody over for that? You don't know if it's expired until after the thing. Are they just saying that that's what the excuse they came up with after the fact for pulling him over? Or what? Pulled him over for an expired license. Maybe they're talking about the tax stamp. Anyway, Mr. Kniep had been pulled over for an expired license as he returned from a day out to watch car racing. The 24-year-old deputy believed the elderly man was trying to grab a rifle from the back of his pickup truck and fired at him with one bullet striking Mr. Kniep. Deputy Knox was forced to make a split-second life-or-death decision. And once he fired his weapon several times, said Trent Ferris, a spokesman for the sheriff's office. Split second. I think all murderers and defense attorneys ought to take note to bring that up at trial when your client is guilty as hell of shooting somebody. Say, hey, it only took a split second for my guy to shoot that guy, so we ought to let him off. Or is that only a good defense if you're a cop? Split second has anything to do with it. At least they didn't just put a drop rifle on him like in Afghanistan. Look, we found an AK-47 in the back of his truck. Let that be a lesson to you, York County Sheriff's Department, to carry a drop AK-47 with you the next time you shoot an old man with a cane. And anyway,
So there you go. The point being, of course, that the cop was a coward. Even if the guy was picking up the rifle, for all he knows, he's just trying to get something that, from under it. Right? How split of a second do you have when the subject is a 70-year-old disabled veteran? How quickly was he grabbing his cane that this sheriff thought he had no choice but to shoot him? Again, good thing that he was in such a panic that his, well, we don't know how many shots went wild, right? We know he only got him one time at least. Didn't kill him. You know, I guess I don't really know this. Maybe it's just always been like this. Is it just always been like this, or it's getting worse? I like the fact that every local police story is now international news here, you know, from American police brutality. These guys, you know, like this cop here is now world famous, Terrence Knox, the fool coward who shot an old man reaching for his cane because of what a tiny, pathetic little coward he is. Pathetic coward. He'll go down in history, right? In world history, he will be remembered as that tiny, pathetic coward who shot an old man reaching for his cane. Gonna have to retire that last name. So I like that. But it seems like the cops are getting more and more out of control. And you know what I think it is? I think it's the training. You know what I think the training is? I think the training is not just more and more military-like in terms of tactics, but I think the training is that, listen, all of us cops here know that we are evil, that we are predators, that our job is waging war against the citizens of America. The problem is they're all starting to catch on, and they all really hate our guts. And so be very, very careful out there. Because the average Joe American would like to blow your head off. And they believe that. Anyone they come across might be willing to take their life. Now, they don't have any actual real anecdotes like that, where regular Americans rose up with pitchforks and torches and started killing cops. That never happened. But they believe it. They're terrified. And, you know, I'm just kind of an armchair psychoanalyst here, but I think that all the cops know. They don't lie to themselves anymore. They don't lie to each other anymore. There's no pretense any longer inside the organization. They are the big fat pigs who eat out the substance of everyone better than them in this society. That's who they are. They are the enemies of our society. And they know we know that. And they know we hate them for that. And so they're on edge, man. And plus all the steroids. All these guys, you know, they probably look a lot like me if it wasn't for all the steroids they're pumping into their arms all day. Which is part of why they're willing to fly off the handle and kill your father or your grandfather at a moment's notice for no reason whatsoever. Like this lady cop the other day. You heard about this one, right? I mentioned on the show yesterday. The lady cop banging on the door. The son says, "Who is it?" She doesn't answer, but keeps banging on the door. So he opens the door, and she just kills him. Blam! Shoots him in the heart, or maybe it was in the face, I don't know. And killed him. Dropped dead. Blam! On the spot. Because he had a Wii controller in his hand. Why was she there? Nobody knows. I don't think anybody knows in the first place what she was there for. Maybe she had a warrant for somebody else or something. But she could have swore she saw a man with a gun in his hand through the window. Oh my God! And then so what she did, she goes and bangs on the door, but she doesn't say, "Police, come out, show me your hands, something easy." The kid was just sitting down with his family to watch a movie. She killed him.
wasted his one life like he was Robert Kagan or something. Just took it from him. For nothing. Because she is a tiny little pathetic coward. I forgot which county in Ohio. But that's who these cops are, man. They're terrified of the average American. And the average American's all right. I mean, I know Austin is a really nice town, but I've been around a little bit. I was a cab driver for a while. Admittedly, and Austin is a real nice town. But I've been around a little bit. And I know not everybody's nice all the time. But I also know that if I was a deputy sheriff, I would not assume that everyone was trying to kill me. Because I'm not a pathetic coward. But that's who they hire, and then that's how they train them. The more cowardly and pathetic you are, the better. Hey, listen. When in doubt, murder whoever it is. We got your back. You'll never, ever, ever, ever be indicted or tried or prosecuted or convicted if you kill somebody. Oh, and if you shoot them, you better kill them. So if you have to empty your entire magazine in order to make sure you put one through their heart and one through their brain, make sure you kill anyone you shoot. Because if they can survive to testify against you, then all bets are off, kid. You might have to do 2 weeks paid vacation. And that's what they tell these cops in training. The American people are your enemy. If they make the slightest move, blow their head off. Doesn't matter if it's a helpless little girl. It doesn't matter if it's a helpless old lady. Doesn't matter if it's a quadriplegic in a wheelchair, Houston, Texas. Just kill him. Just kill him. You'll never be indicted. And in fact, if you find one in a million shot where a prosecutor actually says, whoa, this is beyond the pale, this is a murder, and a badge isn't a license to murder people, and ladies and gentlemen of the grand jury, I think we need to prosecute this guy, and you need to give us an indictment here. They'll no-bill him anyway. And if they don't, the Pettit jury will acquit. Like just happened in California a few weeks ago, where these cops beat this homeless man to death. Whole thing on film, brutally announcing as the guy puts on his ass-beaten gloves that I'm about to F you up. You see these fists? They're about to F you up. And then they proceeded to beat him to death. And then the only reason they were prosecuted at all was because he was the son of a cop, one of these Ubermenschen whose lives are worth 10,000 times more than yours or ours. And so even though he's a homeless, bum, loser, scumbag from the streets, he was part superhuman police whose lives have value. And then the cops were still acquitted because they're cops. They can kill whoever they want, and juries love it. The jury was probably made up of a bunch of ex-cops and soldiers and scum anyway. They love it. Don't worry about things you can't control. Isn't that what they always say? But it's about impossible to avoid worrying about what's going on these days. The government has used the war on guns, the war on drugs, and the war on terrorism to tear our Bill of Rights to shreds. But you can fight back. The 10th Amendment Center has proven it, racking up major victories. For example, when the U.S. government claimed authority in the NDAA to have the military kidnap and detain Americans without trial, the nullifiers got a law passed in California, declaring the state's refusal to ever participate in any such thing. Their latest project is offnow.org, nullifying the National Security Agency. They've already gotten model legislation introduced in California, Arizona, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Kansas, meant to limit the power of the NSA to spy on Americans in those states. We'd be fools to wait around for the U.S. Congress or courts to roll back Big Brother. Our best chance is nullification and interposition on the state level. Go to offnow.org, print out that model legislation, and get to work nullifying the NSA. The hero Edward Snowden has risked everything to give us this chance. Let's take it. Offnow.org. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show. And, I know it's kind of hard for me to analyze electoral politics stuff sometimes because I think of the left-right, liberal-conservative, Republican-Democrat type of a spectrum as such a joke, and yet there are so many people who believe in it and are invested in it and act like it that they kind of make it true in a way anyway, make it real, even if it's not the way I would have people define their categories. It is what it is, you know. But the thing of it is, I guess they're celebrating some kind of anniversary of the Tea Party. Maybe it was when that guy, I forgot his name, the CNBC guy said, hey, we should all protest. We don't want to pay for poor people's mortgages or, you know, whatever stupid thing. It was a so-called start of the Tea Party, which is really right. And it really was. I mean, they kind of copied the idea from Ron Paul, but it wasn't really the outgrowth of the Ron Paul movement. It really was more of a right-wing populist Glenn Beck type of a thing, not a libertarian thing. They kind of ripped off the idea from the Paulians, but anyway, what's funny is this that I'm trying to get to is I saw on CNN this morning, it was some kind of anniversary of the Tea Party, so they got some talking heads up there to talk about the Tea Party, and the lady from the Tea Party is saying, well, man, everybody's always calling us bad names and what have you, you know, but if you would just listen to what we're about, you'd think that we're great. And she didn't do a very good job of explaining what that was, but the implication was that, well, yeah, she tried, and what she talked about was the debt. And what she talked about, I don't think she really focused on bailouts or whatever, but she basically tried to sound all just very fiscal conservative. And yet, as one of the other guests pointed out, maybe that's what the Tea Party is to you, lady, but in the minds of everybody else in the country, that's not what it is, fiscal conservatism. Or at least you guys have done a really crappy job of discriminating between which messages you're adopting in your so-called conservatism. Because what a lot of us see here, and he called it the Obama derangement syndrome and the ridiculous birther style attacks on Obama and that kind of thing. And that may be a small part of it. But of course, you know, what he's really trying to say, the stupid idiot, was that it's the social conservatism. The Tea Party, to everybody who ain't one, means you hate gays. And probably you hate minorities if we let you, you know, act like you do, you know, as far as discriminating in your whatever, publicly, you know, businesses that are open to the public or however the Democrats define it. You know what I mean? Everybody sees the Tea Party, I think correctly, as social conservatives. They're not the powerful right. They are the down and out right. They're the rank and file right. But that's not to their credit. The rank and file right are a bunch of jerks. And the rank and file right, they don't oppose power. If this lady was the fiscal conservative and was trying to correct the misimpression that the Tea Party was some horrible social conservative movement, she might have talked about opposing the bailouts. She might have said, every American, left, right, center, conservative, liberal, populist, libertarian, all of us ought to absolutely oppose, in principle, every time, bailouts for bankers. Let them go to bankruptcy court. Let them fail. It's not fair to make poor and working and middle class and even millionaires bail out billionaires. It ain't right. And all 300 million of us accept the bailout ease agree. Now, that's the flag of the Tea Party. That's the only thing we care about. We don't have a position on abortions. We don't have a position on grown men kissing each other or entering into contracts with each other or whatever it is. Our thing is an end to the bailouts. Our thing is an end to the spending. We don't hear that from the Tea Party, do we? What you hear from the Tea Party is that same old just hodgepodge of Republican talking points, basically. Republican talking points for idiots. Who do you hate? Everybody who ain't just like you. Yeah, we heard that one before. We know. We all hate you, too. Oh, yeah, you're against big spending, except for world empire. Who can you rely on to always support world war? The American populist right wing. Yeah, they're just hell-bent on having constitutional government, but they're all for torture, and they're all for spying, and they're all for jail without trial forever for those accused, even by Democrats, of being bad guys. They're for unlimited government. They're for world revolution on an unlimited budget.
And then they want to turn around and pretend that there's anything conservative about their radical right-wing ideology. And that goes for virtually all Republicans. You show me a conservative Republican saying he wants to abolish the empire, and I'll show you a libertarian. That's not a conservative. And if the Tea Party was really trying to spread the message that they were anything other than a bunch of right-wing jerks sore that they lost the last election, then, or the last two, then, and who would like to lord it over everybody who's weaker than them, then let me know. I mean, I'm a libertarian. I don't know exactly what was in the language of that Arizona bill. I'm not commenting specifically on that bill, but in general, of course, all human beings have the right to discriminate on their own property, who they want to do business with. It's as simple as that. Now, that doesn't mean that the states ever have the authority, the legitimate authority to enforce segregation of any kind, but bigots have the right to be bigots. And yes, I know that's easy for me to say since I'm a white, heterosexual, married, you know, American, Texan, whatever, and I got all the so-called privileges and yada, yada, yada. But still, bigots have the right to be bigots. They have the right to refuse to, you know, provide service to whoever they want. It's really too bad, isn't it, that mostly the poor white trash of previous eras ran that principle into the ground, lording it over the poor and black and powerless in this society. That now free association cannot be allowed, cannot be tolerated by, in fact, a supermajority of this society won't let you decide. No, I'm sorry. We tried letting you decide before, and you lynched people all day with your all-white juries and your lies and your murder. So screw you and your right to discriminate. And, you know, the rest of the American society kind of had a point at that point, didn't they? But, of course, if you ever hear a small government argument from a conservative, what's the first argument on the end of their lips? I got the right to discriminate against poor, weak, powerless people that I hate, like queers and blacks. Yeah, of course that's the one right you care the most about. Your right to be a jerk to people who are worse off than you. Yeah, we know. It's called conservatism. You horrible, hateful bigots. And then, and they talk about, oh, I love all the sound bites on TV about this bill. All this bill is it's about our religious freedom. Huh? No, it's not. It's about your right to discriminate against people for whatever reason you want. Call it religion, whatever, right? Or you're telling me it's a matter of religious freedom to refuse to serve somebody at your business. That's a religious freedom now. Okay, good. Dishonest. Just say it. You don't like queers, you don't want them coming around you, you're a horrible, hateful bigot, and you want to make sure that nobody ever sues you for it, right? Okay. That's okay. I actually agree with you that you have the right to be a horrible, hateful conservative. The worst people in America. And that's why I certainly agree with Rand Paul. If the Republican Party doesn't change into an entirely different thing from the thing that it is, you know, the party of conservatism, it will continue to lose. You know why? Because everyone hates you because of all your wars and because of all your lies and because of all your bigotry, because of your endless scapegoating of the weak. If it's not illiterate Mexican, seasonal laborers crossing the border, it's gay teenagers. Or poor black people in the ghetto you want to lock up just for using the drugs you import. And all day long, as much as I hate Barack Obama, I feel no kinship whatsoever with the right-wingers who hate Barack Obama. Because they hate him for all the wrong reasons. As they accuse him of being some kind of left-wing radical, or some kind of right-wing Muslim radical, or some kind of, you know, devout religious fundamentalist atheist, Marxist, communist, spy from Kenya, or whatever ridiculous fantasy. Yeah, the problem with Barack Obama is he cares about the powerless. We've got to stop him, they cry. No, he's hardly half black at all. What he is he's white. What he is he's a conservative, corporatist, nationalist, imperialist, torturer, murderer, warmonger just like George W. Bush in every single way, but a little bit taller and with curly hair. Get it right. The only thing right-wingers have right about Obama is how horrible he is on guns. I never thought he would be so stupid to be so horrible on guns. And I agree with the right wing, and I'm glad that they, you know, in all their hysteria, you know, however overblown it might have been or not, I don't know, faced him down over that bogus attempt to exploit the Sandy Hook and Aurora tragedies to try to take people's guns away. You know, I've often said that I don't think 9/11 was an inside job in the classic conspiracy theory way, but that it might as well have been. They sure as hell would kill as many Americans as they have to exploit, to get away with whatever the hell they have to exploit. Same thing with all these mass shootings. I don't think it's all MKUltra mass shootings, whatever, but boy, aren't the Democrats shameless enough that they'll exploit the deaths of innocent children in order to try to take the guns away from people who didn't do it. Boy, are they horrible. And isn't it beautiful the way the American people are catching on to that and not letting them get away with it anymore? What we should have is a realignment of a real fiscal conservative, anti-bailout, anti-imperialist, pro-Bill of Rights Tea Party, allied with the left Occupy-type movements against power. Like, that wasn't obvious enough.